from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
This hour is brought to you by Cars for Kids.
Swing and a miss, struck him out, ball game. Cubs win. The win of the year. What a rally and comeback as they finish off the sweep in Pittsburgh.
You know, it's a great comeback. I think that was the biggest thing. I mean, we take the lead, and it's just a heck of a comeback. The next couple hits just, you know, give us some space and give Porter some space. So for Porter to go out there after sitting there for probably a half hour and then give us a second inning there was awesome, and he was great. But we played a heck of an offensive game. Pete had a heck of an offensive game. He was outstanding. And just big hits all over the place, great at-bats, kind of up and down the lineup.
I'm actually really glad the Cubs had a day off in between to actually relish and live in the space of that Cubs 14-10 win over Pittsburgh, where they come back from 7 down on Wednesday. We're going to live there in a second and talk about the Cubs. I am Mark Grody. He is Rami Makhlouf. This is the Score Afternoon Show.
And the Score Afternoon Show will be live from Rally House in Wrigleyville next Thursday afternoon, September 5th from 2 to 6. Stop by to enter for the chance to win prizes and shop the best team gear selection in Chicago. Join 670 The Score at Rally House in Wrigleyville next Thursday, 2 to 6, or shop 10 Chicago area Rally House locations and online at rallyhouse.com.
Did you have, Rami Makhlouf, a favorite part of that Cubs comeback? Because there were so many astounding things that went on it, from Bethancourt to PCA to, you know, just individual things going on in this game, overcoming Kyle Hendricks.
It's not one thing in particular, but man, I just, since he's started to figure it out, I just love watching PCA play. I love watching athletes in baseball. You know what I mean? Like, the long ball is great, and usually get those from the corner infielders, but I love a guy like PCA. I worked in Minnesota for a little while. When Byron Buxton could stay healthy and stay on the field, no more entertaining baseball player on this planet when he's healthy and at the peak of his game. I love watching PCA play, and going 4-for-4 in that game, just constantly on base, harassing pitchers, setting the table for the guys that are coming up behind him. He's just really, really fun to watch right now while he's doing what he's doing.
I love watching speed. I am right with you. And it's funny how we're all trying to figure out what he is. Like, what's the comp for this guy? I've thrown out Billy Hamilton, although that would probably feel like an insult to him, because Billy Hamilton never really, he was always just a slap hitter. And you know, he would steal 100 bases or whatever he was stealing. I mean, ridiculously fast. I mean, I think that's a good comp in terms of speed. But early on, I was throwing the name Billy Hamilton out there because it felt like this guy, he didn't seem to have the power. He wasn't gap hitting. And it just seemed like a guy who was not, obviously, by the fact that he is, you know, still hitting ninth in the order, not getting on base enough. I heard somebody, they had a conversation with Craig Counsell about, and this goes way back, Brett Butler, he was a classic leadoff hitter in the 80s, loved, like, Brett Butler was annoying because he'd come up there and choke up, and he would bunt, and he was so fundamentally sound, and he was like the quintessential leadoff hitter in baseball for a few years. And, you know, Craig Counsell's kind of said, nah, I don't think that's it, because the idea is, in theory, they want to see more power out of PCA.
And we've seen flashes.
Flashes, for sure.
That home run in Miami last week that got up to the third deck, like, he's got some pop in that bat. And I don't know if he's quite, but in the same category when you talk about power, but the guy I just mentioned is the player I'd like to be able to compare PCA to one day, and that's a healthy Byron Buxton.
Okay.
If he could be something like that, that's as impactful a player as you can put out there on the field when you talk about all the things they can do with the glove, when they get on base and stealing bases, get that pop, maybe 20, 25 home runs out of their bat in a given year. That type of guy, there's no measuring the impact and the value of a guy who can do all those things for a baseball
team.
Would
you say that PCA is as good at defense as Byron Buxton
was there.
I mean, at his peak? And I'm sure Buxton can still go get it, obviously.
He's right up there. I need to see more of it because Byron Buxton has, even though he's had the injury problems and can't seem to stay on the field, he's shown a pretty large sample size of being a guy who can go out there and get him as well as anybody. So I'm not putting PCA in that category yet.
Yeah.
But he can move into that category, absolutely.
Yeah, no, I do. I appreciate all the comps, and I feel like it's an evolution. As he gets better, the comps begin to change, and some of them are a stretch. But, God, if it's – I'll take Byron Buxton every day, and so will everybody for sure. The bigger picture is – and I'm with you, by the way. The PCA, the 5-for-5 being walked – ahead of, was it 4-for-4 or 5-for-5?
4-for-4 with a walk.
And that walk was intentional to get to Bethancourt, who makes them pay with the hit, and he ends up with 7 RBIs on the day. So I guess we could put that day away because now they have re-engaged me. Obviously, I've been pretty busy with the Bears, so I haven't been like completely invested in every second.
Are the Bears about to play again?
Yeah, that's what I've been. That's what they're saying.
Really?
That's what I've been hearing.
Had not heard.
That's the word on the streets. Huh. That's what they've been saying in these sports radio hallways. Huh. That's what's been going on.
Well, I'll be.
So, and I kind of gave up on the Cubs, like maybe even as soon as recently as a couple of weeks ago. But I have re-engaged because, they're 500? They're one game over 500 after a really nice win a couple of days ago? A comeback win from 7 down where you're actually starting to see some development and some interesting things occur. The Cubs are now 2 games over 500. If you'd like, they're 9.5 games back in the division and still 5 games back in the wild card.
They can't seem to dent that 5 or 5.5 game lead in the wild card.
That's a problem. So I'm just going to be really honest. And I don't know why. I think my go-to on the Cubs still is kind of cynical on the rest of this season because every time that they have shown a flash this year, it has gone down the drain pretty quickly, including at the beginning of the season when they were, 10 games over 500? Remember that? Mm-hmm. Early on, they were going head-to-head with Milwaukee, and then it all just drooped. And I've just seen that happen too much. So while I think that they have played great baseball, and I have enjoyed watching it, and I will talk about what is in front of me, I don't buy it. And part of it is what we just said. They've been doing this winning. They finally got a sweep, and they're still 5 back in the
world. I feel like the old Godfather line of every time I think I'm out, they pull me back in. I haven't fully been out on the Cubs. I haven't fully given up on the Cubs. But literally, over the course of that comeback against the Pirates, this is how delicate my Cubs hopes are right now.
Talk to me.
During that game, I went from the season's over to, oh my God, they're going to do this. Within one game.
They're going to do what?
I wasn't just talking about coming back and winning that game when I said they're going to do this. I was saying, and I've sort of calmed down a little bit. Yeah. You know,
don't seem calm right now.
You get carried away when you make a 7-run comeback. But I was like, they're getting this playoff spot. Yeah. That's how delicate and how much I'm teetering when it comes to my Cubs hopes on this season. But more logically speaking, I've kind of put it on this stretch that they're in right now of 18 straight games against losing teams.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, they're 12 games into that, if I'm not mistaken, and they've won 9 of those games, if I have it right. Or 10 of those games, excuse me.
I'm going to go with
it. If I have my math right. And I was saying when they went into it, winning series over these 18 games – is not going to be good enough. You need sweeps.
Same.
And yeah. I know Ian Happ was on this very show, or excuse me, on the midday show last week saying, look, you can't count on sweeps. And I get that from the player's perspective of, you know, putting the blinders on, staying focused. You don't want to beat yourself up when, you know, your playoff hopes are still alive. You want to keep that confidence up and you want to feel good about taking two of three. But from the outside looking in and just doing the basic math of the thing, they're going to need to get some sweeps down the stretch here to close the gap on the Braves and the Mets, who sit ahead of them right now. And the Cubs have no tiebreakers with those two teams. So they, getting that sweep, not just a comeback victory, but getting that sweep in Pittsburgh, to me, was huge. And how they finish this stretch of 18 games straight against losing teams is going to go a long way in me being in or out on this team as Caleb Williams and the guys get ready to get things started in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, Happ in that interview said it's what stood out to me. It's hard to sweep teams in Major League Baseball. Yeah, I mean, that at this level, it is difficult to come up with a sweep. What I really, really like about the way the Cubs are playing, there's two things, and I could actually just circle a number here right now. In the Pittsburgh series, the Cubs scored 41 runs. I realize that that number boosted a little bit with the 14,
yeah.
But it is not. Remember the beginning of the season where it was just painful watching the offense. And look, they're still ebbing and flowing. Dansby Swanson can't quite figure. He's got it. Then he doesn't have it. So I get it. But then you see the ebb. Is it the ebb or the flow when it's good? I guess it's both. I don't know.
I'm not sure.
What have I gotten myself into?
I've been using that expression my whole life, not knowing. To be quite honest with you.
No idea. I'm gonna say PCA was flowing. So then it's like, oh, PCA. He's figured it out. He's on top of it. But I will just say they're scoring runs and the bullpen has been better. Now I know that it hasn't been perfect, but it has been better for sure. Not better, better. Mm-hmm. Those are like legit things that you can start to win games now if your bullpen is refurbished and starting to click a little bit, and life is a lot easier for Craig Counsell when the team scores runs. Remember all the blown saves, all the one-run games that they have had. Scoring runs might be the biggest thing this year that is annoying me about the Cubs, and now they're starting to score
runs. Isn't it crazy how that happens, how your manager doesn't look like a giant idiot when the team is scoring runs and the bullpen isn't choking the game away every time they run out there to the mound? Isn't it crazy how that happens?
It's amazing, and I will say this, like, good for Craig Counsell. Like,
yes.
He has been, for better or for worse, he's been like the same guy every day, giving the same answers and, you know, sometimes getting into it a little bit and being very defensive of his team. Here he is. He has this team, which look, there was a time when I thought, Rami, the bottom might drop out. Like, there was some moments where it's like, oh, man, six games.
Same.
Like, okay, we're heading for a full-blown, the Cubs might end up 15 games under 500. Craig Counsell has this team two games over 500 now.
Speaking of Craig Counsell, can I give you some numbers that maybe will fuel your hope for this Cubs team?
Please.
In 2018, and this is from The Athletic today, 133 games into the season, Craig Counsell's Brewers were six games out of a playoff spot. Folks in this town know what happened next. They caught the Cubs, beat them in game 163 to win the division. The next year, the Brewers were five games out of a wild card spot. 139 games into the season, they ended up taking that final spot by three games. Counsell's teams, as The Athletic tells it, have generally had strong Septembers. Last year, they were 17-11 in September and after a 17-9 August. I've spent most of my career in Milwaukee,
yeah,
Brody, for
yeah.
The Score sister station, 1250 AM The Fan, almost the entirety of Craig Counsell's tenure out there. This is a trait of Craig Counsell-managed teams, that in August and September, they play their best baseball. And it's one of the things that, even when things were bad earlier in the year, I was looking at it and going, if he can pull off that magic act again, there's still life left in this baseball team. And we've seen it in August, and hopefully it goes into September, that whatever that is, whatever that magic pixie dust is that he sprinkles on his teams in August and September, if they get the type of September that I just read off, 17 yeah. and 9, like they got from the like he got with the Brewers last year, that might be a playoff berth.
You know, and that stuff, like, you can look at a manager's resume and say that there is some reality to it or legitimacy, because we all watch Joe Maddon do what he does.
Mm-hmm.
He did it with Tampa Bay year after year, like, just went beyond expectations. And then 2015 was just like that. The Cubs were in 2015, they were a middling team most of the year. Most of they were a couple games under 500, 3-4. They never dropped off the table. They would get over and then they would drop. It was just this little volatility going on with the 2015 Cubs. Then come the time when Joe Maddon begins to thrive, as he had in his previous stop in Tampa Bay. It was July and August where he comes to play. Like things like with Maddon, it was pretty specific. He wouldn't put up with stuff anymore. There were, you know, whatever silly stuff he was doing, putting Pedro Strop in the outfield or having Chris Coughlin come in and play third base or second base. I know he played infield some in his career, but he would stop the silly stuff. And if a pitcher would go out there and he was getting bad, like Jason Hammel, when he would get battered around, you're coming out in the second inning, kid. Sorry. Yeah, I let this go in May, but this stuff ain't happening anymore. I'm not sure what Craig's version of that is. I don't know. Maybe you have that insight in terms of what he actually does different, or it's just a slow elevation like this season has been to the top where you don't even notice necessarily what Craig Counsell specifically is doing to do his part.
I don't know if it's something that he's doing managerially, as far as what buttons he's pushing in the dugout during a game. Like we just said, when players play better, you're pushing the right button a lot more often than you're pushing the right one. You know,
natural.
What I mean? When you have a bullpen that can get outs, you're gonna get the answer right more times than not when you call on your bullpen. I really think it's a leadership thing. And he talked about early in the season, hey, we're gonna get punched in the mouth. That's gonna happen. How do we react to that? He seems to always have his teams believing in themselves, pointed in the right direction. He always has good vibes with his baseball teams and around his clubhouse. And that was really one of the things that surprised me about this baseball team early on in the year, is that it seemed like a very low-key baseball team. Like they weren't having a lot of fun playing baseball and the vibes didn't feel great. And I was like, this is not what I remember Craig Counsell managed teams to be. They were always fun, good vibe baseball teams with great clubhouse chemistry. And I think that's sort of come together as the season has gone on in his first year as manager. I think that's really one of his strengths, is having a great clubhouse and really good chemistry in that clubhouse and a baseball team that believes in itself.
The Cubs just don't have a lot, and I think I remember hearing you talk about that. I think the problem with the Cubs is they just don't have a lot of guys on the team that are wear your heart on your sleeve.
Yes.
Like, and usually in all of our sports, there's always one guy. So when you're bereft of that, it does seem odd. Like, I think the closest the Cubs came to that was Christopher Morel, maybe, on this team.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, like, Bellinger is not like that. Nico Horner is low key as well. Dansby Swanson, I'm trying to think who Ian Happ, another guy. These are all really calm, measured, which is a good thing. Like very measured guys, but none of you need one guy that wears his heart on his sleeve.
I think that served them this year to be even keeled, and I think Craig Counsell's even keeled attitude has served them this year to not panic when things didn't look good. But early in the year, You could have used a firecracker and a guy who is, you know, the battery for this baseball team in terms of the energy and the vibe. I thought it was something that was missing.
Justin Steele, before somebody crushes me for not mentioning Justin Steele. He does wear his heart up.
Throwing his dugout against a wall and saying, let's bleep and wake up.
Exactly.
When he was pulling out of a game earlier this year. But it's hard for a starting pitcher. You know, he goes out there on the mound every day, or once every 5 days. You need sort of an everyday guy who's the energy guy for a baseball team.
You need David Ross. That's loaded right there.
What's he doing right now?
I don't know. Like, man, he has kept very quiet. I can't wait until we can get David Ross back into the ether a little bit. Because everybody still loves David Ross. They just had a better option on the table. Tell you what. Let's keep the Cubs conversation hot, Rami. Coming up next, let us bring in Michael Cerami of Bleacher Nation to talk more about the Chicago Cubs. This is the Score Afternoon Show. I'm Mark Grody. He is Rami.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
I mean, Maklouf, and this is The Score.
How would you describe, I mean, where this team is at? September right around the corner, pulling off the sweep. Just how would you just describe the trajectory you feel like you guys are on?
Yeah, I mean, we're playing really good baseball. Like you said before, the offense is doing its job. We've really strung together some good offensive performances. We continue to do that. I think I've been saying this for a couple weeks now. It's game by game and series by series. And win a couple series in a row, the sweep there is nice, and go to Washington and see if we can win another series and head back home. So good start to the road trip, but it's not over.
Amen. That is Ian Happ of the Cubs. Cubs at Washington tonight, 5:45. It's a Shota Imanaga night. Jake Irvin on it for Washington. He is 9-10 with a 3.80 ERA. Has had a bad August, which obviously one would suspect might portend well for the Cubs tonight as they are five games out in the wild card. This hour is being brought to you by Busey Bank, building business, growing wealth since 1868. I'm Mark Grody, along with Rami Maklouf on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, the afternoon show. And Rami, before we bring in our next guest, Michael Cirami of Bleacher Nation, who we're looking forward to talking to Cubs with, just so people know that I want it for the Cubs. I know I said I was a little bit cynical about this team because of just, I remember what happened before the Cubs were two games over 500, and they've just lost trust with me. I want to read this text message because I like it, and it's fueling my optimism right now from the 630. Hey, Mark. It's Mark with a C, which is actually Mars. Have faith with Phillies. Are going to sweep the Braves, and the Cubs are going to sweep Washington. We could be 2.5 games out after this weekend.
I don't know. Again, it's hard to sweep teams. One of the texters said, did anybody tell the White Sox? I guess not. So I'm not counting.
They're living in a sweep world, man.
I'm not counting on anybody sweeping the Braves necessarily, but Grody, if you look at the remaining schedules for the three teams atop the wild card race, or the race for that third wild card spot, I guess I should say, and that's the Mets, the Braves, and the Cubs. The Mets, who are right ahead of the Cubs, two games ahead of them, they have 7 left with the Phillies.
Okay.
3 with the Brewers, 3 with the Braves, and 3 with the Red Sox.
Ooh.
They have 16 games left against really, really good teams that are right now in the playoffs.
Now you are helping me.
Atlanta, not as tough, but 4 against the Dodgers, 3 against the Phillies, 3 against the Royals, and 3 against the Mets. So they have, quick math, 13 games against teams that right now are in or around the playoff picture. All the Cubs have left, and this is not easy, but they have 3 with the Dodgers, 3 with the Phillies, 3 with the Yankees. The rest are losing teams.
Okay.
The rest of their schedule outside of those three series are losing teams.
Let's bring in Michael Cirami, the Bleacher Nation, and he's joining us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Is Aturo your hometown tire? Aturo.com. Michael, what do you think about all that? Is there hope for this? Should I be more optimistic about the Cubs actually breaking through and getting into the postseason this year? And hey, how you doing, by the way?
Hey, good. How are you?
Sorry, man. We're just like in mid-convo here. Sorry, buddy.
No, I was enthralled. I was starting to feel my optimism rise, too.
Good.
I think a couple of things. I think you guys are hitting the nail on the head in terms of the Cubs' primary salvation here being their schedule. Their remaining schedule is among the weakest in the National League. Moving forward, and the only teams that really matter are the Braves and Mets, and for what it's worth, the Giants, who are right behind them, actually have the third toughest schedule in baseball, so that portends well for the Cubs. But, you know, when you start looking at the actual math of it, you need simultaneously for the Cubs to go on a really nice run. They've had a good month of August, but you also need the Braves to cool off, and they have not. They've despite, you know, the Cubs sweeping the Pirates, they gained a half game over the last 4 days, and that was by not playing yesterday. So it's been tough. It's been challenging. And although the Cubs don't have a ton of opponents remaining that are over 500, those three you listed, Dodgers, Phillies, and Yankees, just so happen to be three really good teams, not just like pretty good teams. So those are tough. Those are tough matchups. But I will say, as a fan of a team that has seen Craig Counsell led squads, you know, lead the Brewers to resurgent, months of September to snatch playoff hopes away from the Cubs, I guess I won't say it's impossible. It just will require a lot more winning from here on out, and some, you know, the Braves to play ball a little bit, to play along.
The opposite
of play ball.
Little help here. Basically.
Yeah, not play ball. Just show up and don't play ball is what we're looking for the Mets and the Braves to do. I heard Craig Counsell a couple weeks ago say that he was kind of surprised that PCA found his routine and sort of his sea legs at the major league level as quickly as he has. Are you surprised by this spike that we've seen in the production from PCA?
I mean, listen, no one should expect the, you know, from July 27th on, as just one really convenient cutoff. Pico Armstrong has been incredible, slashing 330, 387, 567. That's really, really good. If he did that over the course of a full season, he'd be the greatest Cubs single season ever, maybe, because of his elite defense and speed. That's not a level of production that anyone should expect from him going forward, but even setting that aside, you go back further to the beginning of July, and he's roughly 10% worse than the league average hitter over that stretch. And with his defense and speed, again, not just stolen bases, but taking extra bases when he's already on and the Cubs are getting hits behind him, has made him about a 2-win player over the course of a full season. That's a 4, 4.5 win player, which is an all-star. I mean, he's already arrived. He's already, based on just his full season numbers, the sort of player that the Cubs can count on next year as a really impactful piece. Now, if he can be even average or better, we're talking about a star level player. And the reason I'm not necessarily surprised, again, keeping in mind that I'm not talking about the level of production he's been at over the last month. It's been incredible, but that's not going to happen over the course of a full season. But the reason I'm not surprised is, at least as it relates to his early season struggles, I was never concerned about a 22-year-old elite defensive center fielder who's hit at every step along the way, struggling against big league pitching at a point in baseball history when the gap between AAA and Major League Baseball is as wide as it has ever been. It takes guys a while. It takes a long time. And he's exceptionally young to be playing in the big leagues. So that's why I was, you know, vocal about everyone pumping the brakes a little bit on their concern. I know we got a little bit too used to seeing prospects like Chris Bryan or Kyle Schwarber or even Ian Happ come up and dominate from thing one. But those guys came up much later and they were older, even though they had quick ascents through the minors because they were drafted out of college. So it was a very different time. And we just had that locked in our brains that you come up and you dominate right away. And that wasn't the case for PCA, and the alarm bells were going off. Well, now, not only is he producing, he's doing it in just these incredibly meaningful and sustainable ways. His plate discipline has improved dramatically. He's swinging at many fewer balls. He's swinging at more strikes. He's making more contact, striking out a lot less. He's hitting the ball hard. He's hitting more line drives, fewer ground balls, more fly balls. His average exit velocity is at the top end of the charts relative to players at his position. And it's all resulted in improvements in his overall production. And he's doing all of that with a 299, I think it was, batting average on balls in play. For a guy with his speed, that's low. That's very sustainable. Yeah. So everything about what he's doing is not just, you know, believable in the package of a top prospect who has had a quick ascent through the minors himself, but also based on the underlying data. So no, I'm not surprised, even if I don't think it'll necessarily level off in this extreme impressive quality that we've seen again over the last 6 weeks.
I want to move on from PCA, but I think the only reason I became skeptical about PCA and not giving him as much breathing room as he probably deserved last year is because he wasn't hitting fastballs. But I get it. Velocity is up and crazy. So even that trick becomes a little bit more difficult. But to your point, yes, at all that, he's hit 342 over his last 23 games. On the other side of things, you know, the one thing that, you know, that was tough in that comeback win the other day, the 14-10 win over Pittsburgh, was Kyle Hendricks. Here we go again with the questions about Kyle Hendricks and his sustainability with this team. An inning and two-thirds, 6 runs, 8 hits, 3 walks, which just kills me when I see the walks next to his name. How do you think that, and we've been asking this question, we ask it a lot early in the year, how do you handle Kyle Hendricks?
I hate to say it, as he's one of my favorite of all time. you wait out the clock. We're nearing the end of this, I think. And Jordan Wicks has made a few successful rehab starts at AAA. At some point, hopefully, preferably soon, you see Wicks come up and take over that rotation spot. He was scheduled to start tonight for Iowa, but then he was scratched. I don't know if he is going to make his way to the Cubs. He's not starting this weekend, but maybe he sort of transitions into the rotation by piggybacking off of Hendricks, and you hope Hendricks can give you an inning or two, or obviously hopefully more, but maybe the plan would be to give him, a couple innings, just one or two times through the order, have Wicks come in, take on the bulk, and then sort of flip those roles down the stretch, and that might have to be that. I love Kyle Hendricks. He has been one of the most consequential pitchers in Cubs history, frankly, and is nothing but beloved by this city. And it's just, for whatever reason, and it's not the drop. It's not a drop in velocity. It's not a change in movement. He's tweaked his pitch mix to throw more curveballs. For whatever reason, it's just not working, and he's getting shelled time and time again. There was a nice stretch there where he was a usable, playable fifth starter, and the Cubs needed it because they had 3 or 4 of their young starters on the injured list all at the same time. So, Hendricks was valuable this season in a sense, but if Jordan Wicks is healthy, he is easily, in my opinion, one of the top 5 starters the Cubs can put on their staff at any moment right now, so he needs to be the guy. And if that means Kyle Hendricks back to the bullpen the rest of the way, that's what it has to be.
Speaking of the health of this pitching staff, one of the things that's been great and has fueled this turnaround for this team is that bullpen. Yesterday, Julian Merriweather, he goes on the IL with the knee tendonitis. They still don't have Jorge Lopez back from his groin injury. That might end up being an IL stint. Can they finish the job down the stretch here if we're looking at two guys who have been as impactful as those two have been for that bullpen watching from the dugout?
Yeah, I mean, those two are certainly incredibly important. Merriweather, of course, hasn't been with the Cubs for much of the season as is. So you have to just hope that Tyson Miller can continue to be the sort of steady presence that he has, and Porter Hodge can continue his ascent into a late inning type pitcher. He's been really, really good, really impressive. And there's still plenty of talent up and down, including Ethan Roberts, Daniel Puencia. I mean, these are guys that have big league stuff. They just need to rein it in. They obviously haven't yet, but they might need to step up if someone like Jorge Lopez isn't going to be available. Ditto Drew Smyly, who's still around. he's been, pitching plenty of meaningful innings all year as well. So it'll be more challenging, but at the same time, I feel a lot better about the state of the Cubs bullpen today, even despite those injuries, than we did 3 months ago. Right. So hopefully people can continue contributing, but boy, there has been a lot of injuries on that side. And the unfortunate news that Ben Brown's season is likely over, just based on that very confusing, troubling neck issue that he's dealing with. That's a bummer as well, because, he was obviously one of the guys that was like the brightest spot out of the emerging Cubs bullpen, across the middle of the year.
Yeah, totally. How did you take in the Wednesday game, the comeback win? What was your Give us a little real time of how you, your emotions, what you were feeling, if you, you know, the whole thing.
No, I totally blew it. I let everyone down because halfway through the game, I was like, I think I tweeted, I can't wait for this game to be over. It was just misery. You put up three runs against Paul Skeens in two innings, and that felt like a waste. I mean, it was a day where we came into that game going, okay, listen, most likely the Cubs are not winning this one. They have one of the best starters in Major League Baseball going up against Kyle Hendricks. You know, the Cubs haven't completed a sweep in a long time. It was one of those games. And then right out of the chute, they started scoring. And you're like, wait a second. I mean, this team has life. It's doing something. And then the blow-up came, and it was just so deflating. And I had tweeted something to that effect of, like, I can't wait for this game to be over. And then they started slowly coming back. And I didn't tweet a thing because I was like, well, I'm not going to be double wrong and double insults right now. So I waited. And every guy got the quote tweets poured onto me. Like, oh, I bet you wish the game wasn't over now. And I was like, yep, hands up.
Here they come.
That was incredible. Never happier to be wrong in my life. I loved when they intentionally walked PCA because at first I was like, oh, my God, what a bummer. I was so looking forward to that at bat. And then, of course, Christian Bethencourt just continues to dominate. And then they just poured on run after insurance run after insurance run. And it was just smiles all the way. And there's nothing better than a comeback win, but there's nothing better than a series win before a day off, because otherwise you have to sit and stew in that. And that would have been a lot more frustrating yesterday had they not pulled it off. So I count that win, that giant late comeback, as, you know, cosmic balance for the Padres loss earlier in the year where they blew a similarly unblowable lead. And now things are a little bit more even with the world. So hopefully the Cubs can keep that momentum going tonight and put on a little show for us the last month of the season.
I do like thinking about the PCA getting intentionally walked, and his reaction in his brain had to be, oh, sick, man. I've gotten to the point where that I'm – and then Bethencourt's like, screw this. So you, like, circle those two guys. That's your ball game right there.
Yeah, I mean, I think a fan even yelled, you suck, to Bethencourt.
Yes.
Incredible. And PCA, of course, was 4-for-4 before that. So that was his first four-hit game, but then he also reached base five times total. So that was beautiful. And again, Bethencourt got a chance to say, well, hey, I'm not going to suck right now, and came through. He's done nothing but impress since he's been here. It's been and he was not even – and we kind of lose sight of this, but Tomas Nito was the catching addition. And
oh, then he got hurt. And I forgot about him.
Exactly. Yeah. And Bethencourt was the other guy.
Yeah, the other guy. Yes.
Right.
So it's pretty incredible.
It's actually fun to see him come through.
I love it. Michael, thanks for your time, man. Appreciate it as always. And as always, may Kyle Hendricks survive.
May Kyle Hendricks survive.
Take care, man. That is Michael Cirami from Bleacher Nation. Obviously, some great insight from him there. When we return, Rami, I need to share with you maybe the most important thing that I learned at Bears camp that is going to do me and other reporters well for the rest of this season.
Okay.
So I'm going to share that with you next here. It is the afternoon show, today being manned by Mark Grody and Rami Makhlouf on The Score.
Originally from Melbourne, Australia, and I was working a litany of jobs, really, not really sure what I wanted to do in life. Was kind of working in construction, a little bit at the golf course, and then Pro Kick Australia kind of came up. They basically help guys transition from Australian football to American football style punting. And I thought, well, why not just go for it? I'm not really enjoying what I'm doing. And then, yeah, got the offer from Iowa just a couple of months later.
This is Tori Taylor's favorite song, because the guys who sing this are Australian.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, bunch of Aussies. Welcome back into the Score Afternoon Show. I'm Mark Grody. He is Rami Makhlouf.
And the Score Afternoon Show will be live from the Rally House in Wrigleyville next Thursday afternoon, September 5th, from 2 to 6. Stop by to enter for your chance to win prizes and shop the best team gear selection in Chicago. Join 670 The Score at Rally House in Wrigleyville next Thursday from 2 to 6 p.m. or shop 10 Chicago area Rally House locations and online at rallyhouse.com. Bears.com.
What I think I and the rest of my fellow Bears reporter brethren and sistren out there, I think the main thing that I learned, and I hope everybody else learned, is that we are ridiculous Americans. We are, because of what we think of, what everybody thinks of when they think of Australia. You think of crocodiles and snakes and maybe beer.
Yeah.
And the crocodile hunter.
And that's not a knife.
Yeah, that's right, not a knife. Right, yeah. Right, crocodile hunter. This is the most dangerous snake ever. One bite from this little guy and you're dead. Let's mess with his offspring. There is all of that. That's the direction we go. I think I learned that Tory Taylor from Australia, but via a couple of cuts, does not need it.
He does not appreciate it.
What do you think of crocodile punter? There we go.
I definitely don't want that one. How original. I don't want any like Australian attachments or anything like that. So, in fact, if no one knows who I am, that usually means I'm doing a pretty good job.
Doesn't need it.
Who was that asked him?
It was about Pat Finley, but I tell you what, no shade towards Pat Finley, because there had to have been other reporters thinking the exact same thing.
Somebody had that same question locked and loaded before Pat fired it off, no doubt.
Absolutely, absolutely. And moreover, even more so even, on the next thing, because of the topic which Tory Taylor was discussing.
It's kind of one of those things, too, that punters get a little nervous. It's like, oh, man, what's a returner going to do? But the returner's just as nervous as well, you know what I mean? This is going to sound really funny, but it's kind of like snakes, you know what I mean? It's like everyone's kind of scared of snakes, but they're just as scared of you. So it's kind of one of those – it's similar to that, if that makes sense.
The obvious follow. Do you have experience with snakes?
Come on, man. What's with all these – this is strange. Snakes – I mean, I brought it up, but I actually nearly stood on a snake. It would have been like 7 or 8 years ago. So, yeah, I have encountered a couple in my lifetime. But usually if you just leave them alone, they'll leave you alone.
That's... Oh, no. Here we go.
Why did it have to be snakes?
I hate snakes.
That's on him, though. That's on him. That's on Tory Taylor, because that's an analogy that only an Australian would make.
Yeah, like, that's true.
It's kind of like dealing with snakes, mate. Like, who knows what dealing with snakes is like? Nobody knows in America what dealing with snakes is like.
Yes.
That is the natural follow-up.
It is. I was thinking it. I know other reporters. Hat, you know you guys were thinking the same thing. Let's not put this all on Pat Finley. You know?
Like, we're all gonna be like, snakes. Okay, that makes sense. I understand what you're saying.
I feel like that was the most important thing that we just further. Oh, okay, he's not down with all this.
Why do we do that?
Yeah, that's why I said we're ridiculous Americans. The way we look at things, the way we see things in a small way.
I do some stand-up comedy. There's two stereotypes and accents that you can still like play on and make jokes about. And one is Australian, mate.
Uh-huh.
And the other one is like the Italian American. Like, how you doing? Nobody gets upset over those. Are the last two.
That's hilarious.
Those are the only two that you can still do.
And maybe this is the beginning of the end of Australia. Maybe that's what young Tory Taylor is portending, for people who like me use that word earlier. I don't know if I used it right that time.
It's a good lesson. It's a good lesson.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. Must take a break. When we come back, oh man, there was a time on this radio station when Rami Makhlouf had what was considered at the time the worst take ever on the score.
Yes.
He now has a chance for some revenge on all the crap he has taken. That is what is happening next on the Score Afternoon Show on the Score.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.